give this person your place. Has that ever happened to you? Have you ever seen seats that were open at a theater or sporting event and they were closer to the action and you thought, well, you know, no one's there. Why don't I just go and sit down? And then the owners of those seats, the ticket holders, come at a later point when you thought it was safe and they say, hey, those are my seats. It's happened to me. Or have you ever been embarrassed at a social gathering or felt left out because you were not invited at all? Have you ever been to a celebration or fundraiser with assigned seating and grumbled about how far back your table is? I'm guessing that all of us have had one of these kinds of experiences at some time or another. So the parable Jesus tells about a wedding banquet feels very relatable. Unlike many of his stories, this one does not require much of a leap at all to imagine it could be here in 2019 in New York City. Of all social gatherings, weddings rank really particularly high in terms of how much meaning we ascribe to them, both as hosts and as guests, and also very high in the risk of embarrassment and hurt feelings. Have you ever been surprised, sad, or maybe even a little angry that you did not receive an invitation to the wedding of someone you thought you were closer to than turns out you were? Have you ever not been invited to a party that you thought you would be? So weddings in particular, though, are very high in that. So when Giuliano and I got married, no area of wedding planning made me feel more anxious than creating the guest list. This is New York, after all, and even if we had obtained access to a space big enough to fit all the people we would have liked to have invited, we still would have had to find the budget for all those people to pay for their dinners. Thankfully, our space kept us from having to determine who was worth the dinner or not. In the end, we could only fit a certain number of people into the reception venue. Now, you may be familiar with the next steps. Make a list of all your friends, all your family, all your coworkers, all your acquaintances you would like to invite, and those you think you should invite, and then double that number for all the plus ones. Even being conservative, our list was much longer than the number of people we could fit into that room. So we had to start cutting, and it was painful. And for everyone who didn't make the list, I was so worried that they would feel excluded. Maybe I was overestimating people's enthusiasm for our wedding, and probably I was underestimating their understanding of the situation. In any case, after some careful consideration, most likely some overthinking and overreacting, the list was finalized and the wedding day arrived. Now, to avoid awkward feelings about where people were placed in the room and what that might mean about their status, and also just because we're not particularly formal people, we did not assign tables. There were no place cards. People could sit wherever we liked, wherever they liked. Of course, why do people assign tables in the first place? To make things more efficient and to avoid awkward situations. So one of our friends still gives us a hard time about how she'd planned to sit at a table with some friends. She put down her shawl there even to hold her place and then gone off to get her dinner. And as she came back to the table, she saw, well, her seat was gone. Two other guests had taken the last two spots, including the one with her chair, with her shawl there. Of course, there was no scene. No one came by and said, "Give this person your place." But in another context, that could have happened. And that's why we have formalities and conventions, to avoid misunderstandings and resentment, to know our place, even. Knowing one's place was critical in the context in which Jesus told his story. You see, in first century Palestine, honor and shame were strong cultural forces. And in an honor and shame culture, avoiding the shame is critically important. It's more than just embarrassment. Shame could have tangible implications for your life. A family's business and ability to arrange good marriages for their children could be negatively affected by a public shaming. Public honor, on the other hand, would be essential in securing a family's future. Invitations to feasts, especially a wedding banquet, would be received as a sign that the host honors the guests, and the way the guest would be treated at the banquet itself would underscore that. Guests with a prominent place in the community would expect to be warmly greeted and escorted to prime seats in the gathering. Now, if someone lower in social status sat at a table too close to the hosts and the VIPs, it would quickly become clear that a faux pas had been committed. That person might be subject to shaming. On the other hand, being treated with honor at a banquet would be rewarded with reciprocal invitations, which in turn could help secure that person's social standing. Now, are things really so different in our culture? After all, certainly shame does not exert the same power as we can see from the antics of reality stars and politicians, but honor does have quite an impact. After all, pretty much everyone likes to be included in invitations, to be honored by having an invitation, even if they don't necessarily want to go to an event. Generally, people are more likely to invite you to a dinner party or a wedding if you have invited them to one of your own. People make strategic invitations, after all. And businesses, charities, and political parties all strategically cultivate relationships with people of resources who can advance their interests and causes. Investors and donors, in turn, while interested in the programs, often find that they also personally benefit sometimes from access to other wealthy, powerful people. It's generally understood and accepted. But Jesus turns conventional wisdom upside down. He says, don't seek a place of honor. He counsels modesty instead, humility. Think about how that would look in our 21st century context in New York City. Instead of figuring out how to get introduced to the person in the room who might help us get that job we've been dreaming about, the humble attendee would simply wait patiently to be introduced to those who are above her or his station in the social hierarchy. That might not be such a good move in our time and particular culture, but maybe it could get us thinking about how we value relationships and authentic connection. Jesus goes even further than saying we should practice humility. His vision of hospitality is all-inclusive, radical. He says, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors in case they may invite you in return and you would be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. To his original audience, living in a strongly ordered honor and shame culture, Jesus' words might have sounded a little strange. Why would you invite people you don't know at all? Or if you were going to invite people you don't know, they at least should be someone important, right? Today, such a banquet would still not be all that common, but they do happen because we live in a world that has been shaped by the teachings of Jesus. Churches and charitable groups organize community dinners for those who may not have the means to provide a warm, nutritious meal for themselves. Individuals and families sometimes give up cozy holiday feasts at home to volunteer at shelters or to deliver meals to people who are in their homes. Sometimes people give up vacation time to go on mission trips to serve communities in need. And sometimes something extraordinary can happen that affects a whole community. Take, for example, a story that happened a couple of years ago in July 2017. A couple in Indiana broke off their engagement a week before their wedding. A sad thing. Aside from the devastating emotional toll of the decision, there was also a practical one, a financial one. They had an expensive, non-refundable contract with a venue and a caterer for a sit-down dinner for 170 guests. They decided to make the best of the situation. Sarah, the bride, had an idea. She contacted homeless shelters in the Indianapolis area, and she invited residents to a party. She contacted local shops and businesses to donate suits and dresses for the women, men, and families with young children who attended, because after all, everyone should be able to look their best for a special night out. Guests were greeted by Sarah at the garden pavilion that would have hosted her wedding reception. And as they entered, they found tables decorated with arrangements of roses, and they sat down to a delicious meal. And yes, a beautiful cake. You can actually watch a video online of the event by some of the news outlets that covered it, and you can see that the guests look happy and proud in their new clothes, enjoying this leisurely night. You see, Sarah could have gone ahead and had a party for her friends and family, as some people have done in similar situations, as hard as that might be. Or she could have simply arranged to have the food donated to local homeless shelters, had it delivered there. But instead, she threw a party, and she invited the most vulnerable people from her city. In doing so, she made a lot of people feel very special. And she brought awareness to the issues of homelessness and hunger and housing insecurity in her city. She transformed her pain into joy and something meaningful. And the story did not end there with that night. After the party, Sarah began regularly volunteering at one of the shelters her guests had come from. Instead of a one-time gift, lovely as it was, she started a relationship that kept going. Here at Grace Church, we have opportunities for you to create a banquet for the vulnerable in our neighborhood. Sometimes it could be a literal meal. For example, you might volunteer with other Grace parishioners at Hope for Our Neighbors in Need, the village food ministry we support. If you go, you'll see the care that goes into each Saturday lunch for the 200 or so guests. A menu with high-quality, nutritious ingredients is planned and lovingly prepared. The tables are decorated. Effort is put into making this a nice experience for people who are having a hard time. Or it might be a metaphorical banquet, allowing people to come to the table and be fed in ways beyond food. For example, you might give up a Saturday morning to volunteer with the GO Project, the academic enrichment program for at-risk public school children started 50 years ago by parishioners from Grace Church. Or you could serve even closer. You don't have to leave this space. You can serve here in this church building as an open-door volunteer, greeting the 50,000 or so people who come through our doors to enter, rest, and pray. I hope in the coming year you'll try out one of these opportunities to serve, even if it's just one time. But I hope in doing so, you will find something you love and want to keep going back to. As Jesus said, when you do something for those who cannot repay you, you will be blessed, not just because you're earning those righteousness points, but because when we serve others, we cross social boundaries that no longer have any meaning. We break down walls that separate us. We transcend honor and shame. We transcend networking culture. We transcend hierarchies. And instead, we begin building relationships. We start cultivating compassion, understanding, and a commitment to a just world. We can host a banquet for the world. And we can do it because God has invited us to join a heavenly banquet where love is on the menu. So today, come to the table, take the bread and the cup, and experience the love of God given for you. And then go out, nourished and transformed into the body of Christ, a body that can feed the world. Amen.